Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better on this week's episodes. In the red corner, the movie that made us frightened of hiking in Yorkshire, local pubs, the tube late at night, and oh yeah, frickin' werewolves. From director John Landis, we are talking 1981's An American Werewolf in London.
Isn't this fun? Lovely stroll on the moors.
Did you hear that?
I heard that.
What is it?
You think it's a dog?
Nice doggy. Good boy.
What happened to them?
Well, the police report said they were attacked by an escaped lunatic.
A wolf.
My friend Jack was just here. Told me that I will become a monster in 2 days.
Your dead friend, Jack.
Yes.
While in the blue corner, we leave London for the Scottish Highlands, where a military training exercise goes very wrong after the appearance of not one, not two, but a family of frickin' werewolves. But more importantly, what about the football? Right, Chris? From 2002, it's Dog Soldiers.
I love it when a posh bear talks dirty.
So what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Potters. You have lovely sheep. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley, and I've literally written down, am I that annoying when I'm talking about football? That's a question for Thursday.
Oh, how are you both? Apart
excellent.
From being annoying when you're talking about football?
Excellent.
Good? Yeah, really well.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, I'm very excited to be doing these movies today. Love a werewolf. Really freaking love a freaking werewolf. These were Chris's choices this week. An American Werewolf in London versus Dog Soldiers. Tell us your inspiration.
American Werewolf in London turns 40 this month.
He loves an anniversary.
And you know how I love an anniversary.
He loves an anniversary.
And when does it turn 40? What day?
August the 21st.
Guess who else turns 40 that day?
Oh, wow!
Me! No. Yeah!
You were born on the same day
yeah.
as this. That says so much, doesn't it? It all makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, under a full moon.
Well, it's sort of your full moon is probably, you know, few pints of lager and then you change.
I do change.
Yeah, you
yeah.
do change.
I'm really funny.
argumentative. yes, and so it was. It then came down to what do you do American Werewolf with? There's two obvious ones for me. The Howling, same year, same people, behind the scenes a little bit, and it's another classic, but also, you know, werewolves in the UK.
Right.
And I love Dog Soldiers as well. And I thought Howling would be fun, but Dog Soldiers will be funner.
Okay. I'm fine with that. You know, I told you, I haven't seen The Howling, so I can't comment. But yeah, I'm happy with this pairing. Very happy with this pairing. So the clue you gave on last week's show, Chris, was?
We're trying to keep the wolf from the door.
Correct. And you follow that up on Twitter with?
I had a clue and I thought this is just going to give it away.
What was the clue?
And as the, it was going to be a play on the boy who cried wolf. It was going to be the Brits who cried wolf.
Oh yeah, that gives it away.
So I decided to not do another clue because there's only so many werewolf movies and everyone knew it was already a werewolf movie. Mm-hmm. And I felt like people are going to get it.
Yeah.
And they did.
People did get it, yeah. If you don't follow us on Twitter, you can join the Twitter party at ClashPod. We're also on Instagram at ClashPod. So, the guesses came in. Regular comments transformed under a full moon into guesses. Frank B says, Teen Wolf versus Teen Wolf 2, please.
I mean, we're going to get to Teen Wolf at some point.
Are we?
That's going to happen. Mm. A million percent. I'm a bit
Teen Wolf 2?
Maybe not.
Right, okay.
But Teen Wolf 2's, I mean, they're both bad, but Teen Wolf 2 is one of the worst films of all time.
Liam McPhee says, I really like this one. I think it's sort of, it's based on your first clue, keeping the wolf from the door. Mm. I really like this. Home Alone versus The Purge.
That's a great idea.
Isn't it? The first Purge is because it's obviously before it sort of got out of the house.
Yeah.
Home Invasion Ship. Mm-hmm. Great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea. He says, Liam McPhee, I don't expect this, but I pray for it. As you just heard, that could be a future clash. Tibbs goes Wolf versus The Shining, the link being the big bad Jack Nicholson. But congratulations to James Harrison, who got it right, but was beaten to the correct answer by our winner this week, Russell. Well done, Russell. Your prize is one night stay in London Zoo, in the enclosure of your choice. Dinner will be a prickly businessman who will assure you that this isn't the least bit amusing. Connections then, what we got?
I struggled a bit with this. So they obviously both refer to, it couldn't possibly be a werewolf, it must be an escaped lunatic, but obviously because Luna, the moon, that's it. That's as much as I've got.
I got werewolves.
Well, yeah, obviously. And then I really stretched and I was like, but they're both assisted by people that work in the sciences, such as a nurse and whatever Megan fucking is or isn't, which apparently is a zoologist.
She actually says she's a zoologist.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we'll get on to Megan. I got a lot to say about Megan.
That's good, because the fucking writer's done.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to be saying about Megan. Yeah. I've got silver bullets and nonsense. That was the main thing that I took from it, because obviously in werewolf lore, you always talk about silver bullets kill a werewolf. And in both these movies, I thought silver bullets were part of the law in American Werewolf in London, but it's not. Both of them just get shot by regular bullets and die.
But the dog soldiers, the silver knife works.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. That is true.
Yeah.
Chekhov's silver knife.
Mm. Yes.
But the gas coming out of the cooker isn't made of silver.
That's true. It's enough gas to what, light a candle? No, destroy an entire farmhouse made of stone.
It's an old cooker. We used to have one in Leeds. They're death traps.
On top of a bomb.
David Norton, the star of American Werewolf in London, did say to John Landis after they rapped that those weren't silver bullets that shot me. We can make two more of these movies.
I bet he did, because he was last in Sharknado 5, Global Swarming. Mm. So
Works.
Sharknado movies are great.
Songs with Moon in the title.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Home invasions. One has a scene of home invasion. One is a home invasion.
Mm. Yeah, all right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wolf POV.
Yes.
Good.
We get some wolf POV in both of them.
Lovely.
And that's your lot.
All right. All right. Anyone would think he picked these movies, those connections. Well done.
I'm paying attention.
All right, then. Let's crack on with this. On Thursday, I'm going to be trapped in a farmhouse with some lads, just the way I like it. Which means today, Vicky has woken up naked in London Zoo again. V, take us on a journey.
Never trust a Yorkshireman, my dad used to say, and he was right, because they will literally throw you to the wolves for drinking tea in a pub. Never trust a Southerner, my mum used to say, because if you do get bitten by a werewolf, which also kills your friend, as with charmingly naive US backpackers David and Jack, you may end up in the clutches of a sexual predator posing as a nurse who will ferret you into a charming one bed to keep you as a sex slave. So maybe my mum was wrong, there are worse things in life, like actually turning into a werewolf and murdering some poshos and homeless people and waking up in the zoo before the guy from Midsommar Murders figures it all out. Then you have to watch a porno for some reason, because before causing mayhem as a wolf in Piccadilly Circus, can't do that nowadays, PC gone mad. That's clever, isn't it? PC, Piccadilly Circus. And Jenny Agutter breaks a police cordon because she's pretty, but then you try to eat her. No, not like that. That was earlier in the charming one bed, and that's the end of you, the end.
Wow. There's a lot to unpack there.
I enjoyed that.
We should do a podcast about that introduction.
That was nice. That
Thanks.
Was very good.
Food for thought.
Have you seen this film before?
You asking me?
Yeah, go on.
This is a weird one for me. So this sounds like the Monty Python sketch. Oh, when I were a lad.
When I were a lad, yeah.
But my mum used to tell me the plots of movies to entertain me when we were on walks or when we were, I remember.
Because you didn't have a telly.
Right, but we did have a telly, but we didn't have a VCR. So she'd seen American Werewolf in London and we were once cycling in Brittany, in France. And she told me the entire plot of an American Werewolf in London.
Classic Pam.
In like, really, like, proper detail. Like, she was like, and then the policeman's head bobs across the bonnet of the car yeah, and rolls awesome. Through Piccadilly Circus.
Next time I see your mum, I'm going to ask her to perform American Werewolf for me.
On a bike.
But it was. I sometimes do think that was when I really fell in love with movies, hearing them as stories and then watching them. But the first time I actually saw this, I got as far as them. I was about 8 years old. I got as far as them walking on the moors and the howl. Mm. And I was like, even though I loved watching movies that were too scary for me at that age, I checked out. I was like,
I think you got your timing right because it was about to turn particularly nasty. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been, that scarred a lot of children, that scene.
Yeah. So I tapped out at the Moors attack. So I'd seen it once before, a bit later when I was a teenager, enjoyed it. But this is probably only the second full watch for me.
I remember the video cover very distinctly terrifying me as a kid. There's a really nice poster of them in their cagoules on the moor with the moon. And it wasn't that poster. It's just a close-up of the wolf's face roaring with blood on its teeth. And that really frightened me as a kid. So I didn't watch it for years. I think I recorded it off the telly. And I think it was the early 1990s movie drone when Alex Cox would do amazing introductions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I watched it on YouTube this week and I remembered it where he's pretending there's something after him on the moor. But he was just brilliant at introducing us to cult films when we were kids.
I told you before, one of the greatest pairings I ever watched. I often go on about it, but Cue the Winged Serpent and Alligator, back-to-back movie drone. Phenomenal.
Cracking. I remember really enjoying it, loving the transformation, being weirded out by the Muppet stuff. And when I was a little bit older, being a bit obsessed with Rufus Deakin, the boy who plays Boy with Balloon.
Yeah.
Because he might be the worst actor in film history. And I couldn't understand how and why that was in the film. And we used to talk about Rufus Deakin a lot when I was at school. How did that happen?
I've only seen it once before in the week, and it was at college, and I wasn't really paying attention. So it was when we were at Goldsmiths, and it was on, and I watched it, or I was told to watch it. And yeah, fine, whatever.
Like, it must have been on Mark's VHS shelf.
I asked him about this in the week. You know, he's the only person in the world that still refers to the Halliwell's Guide for films, and he's like, no, we haven't watched it. It's a 2-star film. And I was like, okay. Okay. I know.
I used to love that shelf. I got through quite a lot of them, but you know, when he was like, I wish I'd listened to him more, because he had some great films on there, and he was like, you need to watch Suspiria. And I'm like, what is it? And he's like, it's this Italian horror. No. No, I don't. I don't. Let's watch Lord of the Rings again.
So I would say this is my first. I mean, I know all the key scenes and I know the transformation really well, but I've never really sat down and watched it properly, like start to finish. So there we go.
All right, then.
All right, so let's talk about the background to the film. So John Landis wrote it in 1969, but he couldn't get it away, could he?
No.
Because it's too scary for a comedy and it's too funny for a horror. Apparently, he was inspired. He wanted to do something in the sort of supernatural realm. He was in Yugoslavia, what was then Yugoslavia, and he saw a man being buried feet first and wrapped in garlic. I also read somewhere else that the burial he was witnessing was the body of a rapist. I don't know if that is important, but the people that were burying this man were worried he would rise from the grave. So that sets him off on this track. Of
garlic, though.
Yeah.
So like vampire lore.
Well, do you know what? I was once in a taxi in Greece and he had quite a lot of garlic hanging from the wing mirror, and I'd had a few mythoses by that point. I was like, why have you got garlic on the wing mirror? And he said it's to ward off the spirits of bad luck, you know, for driving. Yeah.
So how did you get in the cab?
So he was making me laugh. He's like, yeah, we don't really do driving lessons, but we all put garlic on our rearview mirrors and it's the same. It wards off bad luck. He was teasing, obviously. But
right.
So this idea, vampire lore, I guess. Right. I don't know.
Chris, you look like you were going to say something when you heard about the guy being buried up to his ankles first.
Vicky said Vicky got it all.
All right, okay.
Thank you. Well.
Oh, he's going to jump in a bit earlier, but he's like, oh, nope, she knows it.
And as John Landis said, like every culture, it is interesting, especially European culture has got like man-wolf stories, but they're obviously man-beast stories. Mm. Throughout the world, even Dracula can turn into a wolf, etc. But he said, quote, no one would make this fucking movie. It took him 10 years to get the funding. Apparently, this is interesting. He funded it with bank loans, and then for like contract geeks, he then entered into what is called a negative pickup deal, where mm-hmm. someone pays for it after it's done. Interesting. But he had enough clout by the 80s, because as we know, he's done Animal House and the Blues Brothers by then. So
fine. I didn't realise. I mean, when I was looking at this, I didn't realise how big both those movies were. I mean, I knew Animal House.
Well, Blues Brothers wasn't big. Animal House was big.
Blues Brothers did about 150 million. Like on a 30 million budget.
A flop.
That's what I mean. So did I. But no, actually, it did a lot. Sorry,
I was drinking.
I'll carry on. It really did a lot, Chris.
Oh, that's great. Thanks.
Yeah, you just no worries.
Throw back over to me just for a second. Because
go for it.
Landis was... So he's got this idea, but he's really obsessed with the idea of a more realistic transformation scene. So the scene in which David turns into a werewolf. So he never understood why in werewolf films that had gone before, specifically the Wolfman from the 40s, the character sort of sits there and lets this transformation happen, and he wanted to show the full transformation, make it painful to watch. He's worked with Rick Baker. Was it on Schlock, which I haven't seen?
You're not missing much.
Oh, really? Oh, okay, good.
It's kind of a dumb student film with a bloke dressed as an ape.
John Landis. Gorilla. John Landis is Schlock in it. He's the guy dressed as the ape thing.
Gorilla, yeah.
I mean, what's interesting is because Rick Baker was like, yeah, I'm up for it, but I need to start work on the actors' body mouldings like ASAP. So that meant they were casting the actors fairly quickly because Rick Baker needed to like get ahead of everything because there's so much work involved in the transformation of David into a werewolf and Jack into a corpse. So apparently when Rick Baker met David Norton, he just said, I feel sorry for you because of the amount of time he was going to have to spend in casts and molds. And this is a quote from one of the actors. It's really funny. So it says, you know, having that thing dry around your face with those tubes. It did occur to me that if Rick was psychotic, all he had to do was take out those little straws and watch you suffocate, which is a good idea for a film.
It's been done.
Has it?
Murder Most Horrid. Do you ever remember Murder Most Horrid?
Dawn French.
Yeah. So there was an episode of that where she basically played an absolute bitch of a Blue Peter presenter. And she has a mole put on her and a tube to breathe through. And I won't spoil it because you can watch it on YouTube if you want. And it's a really fucking dark episode. But someone basically blocks that tube and she suffocates wearing a mold.
Awesome. That's awesome. Mm. So, yeah, just a little bit on casting. So David Norton is known to everyone as the face of Dr. Pepper, which I was unaware of. I didn't know that because in this country in the 80s, did we even have Dr. Pepper? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think we did.
I remember it being a big deal when it was at McDonald's.
There was a big push with that whole what's the world that can happen ad campaign about sort of 15 years ago. But that's all I remember.
Did you watch the advert, though, that he was in? He was in one advert.
I saw a still of it.
It's very annoying and very catchy. I can see why that was a huge advert in America. I'm a pepper, you're a pepper.
Oh, so this is the thing, that I'm a pepper. So apparently John Landis says to him, we're both peppers. I was like, what does that mean? You're both peppers? What does this mean?
I'll post the advert on our Twitter because it's very watchable. Because he's a good dancer and singer, David Norton. He had like a disco hit in 1980. So
he would go to these auditions and he was just like, you know, male dancer number one or whatever. And then before you know it, really quickly, he's cast in this big werewolf film.
It's so weird. I know I made the joke about him being in Sharknado 5 Global Swarming earlier, but I'm surprised he did not have a bigger career after this.
I'm not.
Really?
I think he's cute, but I don't know.
I thought he had a real likability. Like you care about him.
That's true. But yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't hate him or anything. I just do not.
Good.
Sorry. And so that's kind of it. That's as much as I've got. Would you like to add anything more?
I guess the only thing I had was that obviously Rick Baker started working with, as you said, with John Landis on The Metamorphosis at the time of Schlock. And then it took so long to get it made, Rick Baker ended up going and working on The Howling. And so Landis said, I've got the money, let's do it. And Rick Baker said, I can't. And they really fell out. They had a huge argument, the two of them. And Rick Baker felt like he had to do the right thing. Mm. And so he left The Howling, which was quite controversial at the time. Went and worked on American Werewolf, but he left his protege, Rob Bottin, to do The Howling stuff. And that helped launch Rob Bottin's career. So we got two great special effects masters for the price of one there that year.
The only thing I have is that it was almost an American Werewolf in Paris because he was trying to shoot in London, ran into trouble with London's equity system. Mm. And so he started scouting locations in Paris and was like, I'm going to do it in Paris. And then they sorted it out at the end. And one final thing just for you.
What?
Just for you, Victoria.
Yeah.
The guy who plays Jack Griffin Dunn. Mm-hmm. He directed the Sandra Bullock movie Practical Magic.
Did he? I didn't know that.
There you go.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
He's had quite an interesting career, both in front and behind the camera. He's the story editor on the upcoming Wes Anderson movie, The French Dispatch. Which okay. is just quite strange.
He's still working. That's still great.
Good, yeah.
Okay, good.
I'm done.
Okay, great. Shall we talk about the film?
Yeah. Mm.
All right. So we meet buddies, David and Jack, and they've chosen to hike through Yorkshire before going to Rome, which is weird, if you ask me, but fine.
Why? Yorkshire's bloody lovely.
Yeah, no, it's lovely.
I think if you've got 3 months to travel around Europe.
Starting Rome.
I think it's a big shout going to the Yorkshire Moors, which are lovely. But
thanks, Chris.
Quite grim as well. And they're cold.
Cold as fuck.
Even in the summer.
Yeah.
But you want to appreciate the sunshine and the piazzas of Rome by starting somewhere a little bit grim.
Paris.
Fucking London.
Barcelona.
But it seems to be,
Athens.
Jack doesn't want to be there though.
No, it's part of the joke, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's cute. It's fine. And they are, for the time, I think what works, I mean, a lot has been said down along this vein already, but what works so well about this film is they present to us Brits as like typical Americans, typical sort of boys from the US. So they're really easy in themselves. They feel like they totally belong. They hitch a lift with someone. They're not scared to do that with that sheep farmer. They're cracking wise all the time. They'll talk to anyone kind of thing. Like they're supremely confident.
That's Americans.
Yeah. Well, that's what we think at the time. Yeah, as Americans.
They're riding in the back of a sheep truck. They're lambs for the slaughter. And as Landis says, this film isn't subtle. They're dead.
They are. I think the thing...
Opening image.
I think our idea of Americans is sort of matured a bit over these. We now think, you know, the sort of California self-help thing and the mindfulness thing and whatever. But in the 80s, we're like, yes, Americans are loud and this and whatever and all these other stereotypes. So they fit that perfectly. But yet they're still really sweet.
Polite, though, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm. Because that's the thing. Then when they walk into the Wild West Saloon, the slaughtered lamb, this pub is your worst nightmare if you're from the US and you're accustomed to excellent customer service, like which they are.
But sometimes that still bothers me. Like when you've been traveling in America and the level of the customer service you get, and you sometimes, you don't think like when Americans come here, even now in 2021, they must be like, duh.
It can depend where you are in America though. I've been into some bars that aren't in New York and LA where you walk in and you have this reception when you're obviously not from that place.
Did you not used to dare each other to do it? So like, there's not many pubs like this anymore. Back in my day, but in Blackburn, there was quite a few pubs like that. And we used to dare ourselves to run in as like women and be like, 2 pints, please. And then until we got so scared that we'd have to leave.
I ended up in one of them in York on New Year's Eve 2000 at about 4 a.m. We sort of ended up in a lock in there and we were not welcome.
No. You're not.
There used to be one in Highgate, not far from me, literally until about 10 years ago, which was the only pub in Highgate I'd never been in. I was like, let's go in there. Let's go in the Duke's Head. Mm. And it was frosted glass, so you couldn't see in from the outside.
Perfect. It's a great dare.
Pushed open the door, and like there were about 3 old boys sitting around that bar, and they all turned very slowly and looked at us. And we just turned and went, wrong pub.
Yeah. Wrong pub, sorry.
Yep. Weirdly, now it's just become a very cool Americana-style bar.
But that's everything's a gas pub now, isn't it? Like, I do feel sorry for the old boys that got a bit pushed out, but I'm happier for it because I've got more drinking options.
There was another pub in Highgate called the Red Lion and Sun. Again, lovely gastro pub now, very, very nice. But I went in there before it became the pub it is now, and it was this old guy used to run it. And when I was in there, there was a table of old dears sitting around this table underneath the TV screen, and they just ordered lunch. And he just sort of goes over and he goes, you need to move. Rugby's on. Boys need to sit here. Yeah. And they were like,
I get it. We should go to the Black Swan in Guildford.
Yeah.
Because that's where the slaughtered lamb is.
Oh, really?
That's what they use. That pub's still going. Mm. And it looks vaguely similar. I was looking at pictures online. But they've missed a trick there. There's no pentagram on the wall. There's no dartboard.
Yeah.
It's like, why not? This is a really big thing you've got.
Well, the wall where the pentagram was, because I looked at the same photos, has been knocked through to make a restaurant now.
Okay.
So that actual wall doesn't exist anymore.
Sure, but you can put a pentagram on the wall.
Yeah, you can. Hang on.
People will take a photo. People will come to have a photograph taken with it.
I think they're a bit sort of like, we don't want
not in Guildford. Not in Surrey.
doesn't even reference it on the website. I was looking through the website going, how have you not gone? This is the slaughtered fucking lamb.
Yeah, come on down.
Change your bloody name.
Maybe they're just worried that everyone will order tea. But actually, the markup on tea is significant, so I don't know.
That's how you make your money. If you're a brewery-owned pub, sure. Food and tea, because all the alcohol you buy... Mm. Top price.
I know. I used to work as a waitress in a pub like that. And
I know.
Then...
I worked next to you as a glass collector.
Oh, yeah. We were told to push the coffee. It's like, what, no one
wasn't
wants
that
coffee.
Called the slaughtered lamb?
The lamb and flag.
The lamb and flag.
But it used to be called some like the blood bath or something. So they used to do like cockfighting.
It wasn't
or...
called the blood bath.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Who was the guy who was nearly beaten to death in the alley next to it? Not in our lifetime, historically.
Historically, yeah, like...
The Poet Laureate, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Someone, anyway, I can't remember, but yeah.
Terrifying. Fun place. Who's in the pub, though? It's only fucking Rick Mayall. Yay!
Do you know how he came to be in the pub?
I do, but would you like to say?
No, you tell us.
So John Landis goes to the Comedy Store and sees Rick Mayall and Aidan Edmondson and, quote, they were basically just screaming at each other, which is amazing, and you can imagine that. Yeah. So he offers them a part. The next day, Rick Mayall turns up, but Aidan Edmondson doesn't because he didn't believe him. So he's like, oh, well, you just be in it then. Yeah. Brilliant. But he didn't have a part for
it. In hindsight, isn't it such a shame he doesn't have a line?
It's a real shame.
He gets to laugh, but like, oh, it's Rick Mayall.
But I think John Landis says he fell in love with his face. And that's why there's so many shots of Rick Mayall just leering.
Yeah, that's what he does best. Yeah,
it's great. But yeah, I think that's kind of cheeky of John Landis. He was like, there's a part for both of you in it. And Aidan Edmondson really didn't believe him, and Rick Mayall did. And there wasn't.
No, for either
wasn't
of them.
A part.
No. So yeah, the pub is very much like, you're not from round here kind of thing. And the boys are soon kicked out, ostensibly for upsetting a game of darts, I think. But they do look really funny, like sitting there with their cups of tea, things like that. So
they look like aliens, as they're supposed to. Yeah. Like, you know, not outer space aliens, but especially the red puffer jacket. Mm. You know, it's Lance's wife does all the costumes, all his films, and that was very on purpose. And it is, they're all in brown and green and tweed in that pub. And then you've got this red alien coming in. And yeah, he's an outsider from the beginning.
Yeah. He does get table service, though, which wasn't a thing in the 80s. So he's winning a little bit.
It was basically so the landlady to come over and tell them off.
Yeah.
That landlady is brilliant. That is the most realistic landlady I think
she's
I've
fantastic.
Ever seen.
Yeah. And she's great. Even when she's imploring, like, we can't leave them, or whatever she's saying, like, it totally works.
And the way David Schofield says, you made me miss, and just Brian Glover, like, yeah, there's just, so much going on in that scene.
That joke that he tells is so menacing. Like, it's so scary. I don't know if it's because of his accent, it's just a little bit triggering. Like, I'm just like, all of a sudden, my family functions do sour quite easily. And it can often start with someone making a bad joke, not me. And I just felt very nervous in that moment. Right, more on the moors after a short break.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So anyway, they've been kicked out. They're told to keep clear at Moors, but they fucking don't, do they? They wander right onto that Moors and they're still making jokes and they're still like situated in their own Americanness and everything's going to be fine.
You know, you love how casually, like as you're watching, you just sort of watch their footsteps. They don't consciously go or like verbally say, there might be a shortcut or anything stupid like that. It's just a very sort of, like, they don't even realise they're veering off the road.
Well, they're singing, aren't they? They're concentrating on the stupid jokes they're making.
Yeah, and which takes them off the path. And so they do hear a terrifying howling, which is, so is this when you switched off?
One of the greatest werewolf howls in history cinema.
Do you want to know what it actually is?
Yes, please.
It's a pig farm recorded from a distance, in quote marks. I don't know if that, I don't know, were you not allowed near the pig farm? Like, John Landis, get off my farm, running at it with a tape recorder.
See, I had someone saying it was 8 different animal howls cut up and combined, including a wolf and an elephant.
Yeah, I've got that for later. So don't worry, but I won't.
We were told that we weren't allowed on the farm near our school when we were growing up because my friend James Jolly, for a bet for £10, which was quite a lot of money.
It's a load of money at school.
About 1995.
You're going to spend it all on stickers and fags?
I don't know what he was going to spend it on, but he ran into the barn and he bit a cow and he came back with cow's hair in his mouth as evidence, otherwise he wasn't going to get the £10.
He didn't buy a cow.
I mean, did you go to school on like some sort of like the Wicker Man? Like, didn't you go to a normal urban school?
He didn't buy a cow. He found a bit of cow hair.
He claims he pulled the hair from the cow with his teeth, but he may have found. I mean, obviously, we're not idiot kids, so we were like, you just picked that up, but it's good enough.
That is classic Jimmy Jolly.
James Jolly gets a few mentions on the show,
doesn't
he? Sounds like a fucking right laugh.
He's brilliant.
I would really like to meet him.
He doesn't bite cows anymore.
Fine, whatever. What else will he do for a tenner? Let's find out. So Jack is killed and David is injured by this beast. It's terrifying. The fucking blood everywhere. It's amazing. The wolf is shot and just turns into this sort of like little naked guy. So we're off kind of thing. Shit is happening. David gets to hospital. Some jokes about his penis, which is very funny and sort of welcome relief, if you will.
Funny?
It is quite funny.
I feel like it's vaguely threatening because I think there's a lot of stuff about anti-Semitism in this film.
Definitely.
And yeah, what she's done is really, it's unprofessional. It's, I think she doesn't like a Jewish person.
It's very inappropriate. But the trouble is, Nurse Alex Price is also, to my eyes, deeply inappropriate. So it kind of cancels out her colleague's behaviour.
Agreed. She doesn't call her out on it and she should do.
No. And also the Nazis, you know, Nazis in Europe, which if you're a Jewish person from the US, is understandably a fear. And so they're, you know, they're abroad and the fear of like Nazis sort of running
loose.
They've got
Jewish names. They insult each other in Yiddish. And interestingly, as we were saying earlier, most of the werewolf lore doesn't come from a novel or from history. It comes from a Jewish writer called Kurt Siodmak, who wrote the first Wolfman movie in 1941. And he was a Jewish man who left Germany because of the rise of anti-Semitism. This was his allegory for evil taking hold and the face of evil and the mark of the devil and normal people becoming killers.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a really important line in the film, actually, but it's weird.
I agree.
It's really weird.
It is unsettling. But then, like I say, the trouble is, Nurse Alex Price, very quickly, is like, shall I feed you? And it's like, sorry, what? I think you need to back off, lady. And also, this one-on-one intensive support he gets during his hospital stay, like the bit where she's reading a book to him, like the NHS is always under strain and under pressure. Is your job sitting there reading a novel to this man because you fancy him? Like, I couldn't believe it when the doctor was like, just have a massive sit down, Alex. It's absolutely fine. We are not rushed off our feet like every other hospital in the country.
Is the feeding him scene not, does that not fit into your sort of reach around motif?
Interesting.
I know that it's not coming from behind, but I know there is.
That is a low ball.
There's certainly an actual reach around later. But in this instance, is this the meet cute reach around?
It's interesting because he isn't keen. The reach around, it works when you're like, I want you to do this thing and but I'm waiting for you to do it. And
he does in the end, though. Yeah. He's kind of like, no, I won't have my food.
In terms of the way it services the narrative, yeah, 100%. You're absolutely right. Spotted it again.
Excellent.
It's a classic reach around. where are we? Right, so we're in hospital. Let's talk about makeup. So there's a quick wolf face in bright light when David is having these weird dreams, and it's amazing. Like, it's, you know, I'm watching this. I know the very famous transformation scene. I'd forgotten about this bit, and it's so scary. And it looks great. And no one's hiding in the shadows. It's awesome.
Mm.
And it's awesome for the time, and it's still good now, I think. And Jack turns up looking dead as fuck, which is great also. But the story moves on. So he's imploring David to kill himself before he transforms into a werewolf at the full moon and hurts other people.
It's how I love it. I just, it's such an ingenious idea, having a funny corpse like reappearing throughout the movie.
And getting progressively more decrepit.
Yeah. I've only ever seen this in one other film, which was the recent attempt at the Dark Universe version of The Mummy, where Jake Johnson's character reappears to Tom. I mean, it's a direct steal, and he's more and more decrepit as the movie goes on, and he talks to him from beyond the grave.
And Scrooged as well. That's got, when Bill Murray's boss,
the Jacob Marley person,
he's got bits, like the golf ball goes through his face. It's like, that's very funny, isn't it? Mm. And a little bird pops out of his cheek or something. Remember?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that, because it's sexy time. So,
are you not going to touch on the Nazi fucking demon dream?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
That blew my mind. I could not remember that from the first time I watched it. It's horrifying.
It is horrifying. It is horrifying.
How did Jim Henson let that happen? Isn't that a weird, you can't, again, Disney obviously own the Muppets now. You can't imagine Disney saying, oh yeah, just put our thing there.
Nazis, you say? Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
A family getting
Why
mowed
did you
down.
Even ask? Yeah, of course you can do that.
I mean, because obviously there's a connection here, because Frank Oz appears earlier in the film as this man from the embassy. He was always the voice of bureaucracy, I think, in John Landis films, because he was the corrections officer in Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, it's a really strange decision for Henson, but it's unlike you, that has stayed with me. That is one of my abiding memories of this film, is just the Muppets suddenly switching to, you know, Gestapo monsters murdering kids.
Yeah, it's horrifying. So Alex has successfully groomed David to the point where he's now in her flat and he doesn't have a key.
I find you attractive and a little bit sad.
Yeah, what is that? So I read some theories about that, about she's sort of like, she's the bridge between like Anglo-American relations. She wears his NYU t-shirt. She has no issue with him being an American. It's probably quite attractive and all the rest of it. Mm. But is it saying something about Anglo-US relations at the time where it's like, you are attracted to me and sad? Like, what is that?
I don't know. I just thought...
It's quite an unusual thing to say to someone.
I was just imagining if someone said that to me, I'd be like, so you find me attractive?
I got normally had it the other way around. I find you very sad and a little bit attractive, but not enough. I've had 7 lovers in my life. What?
Oh, yeah, forgot that bit.
3 of them were one-night stands. Sorry, did I ask a question? I've forgotten it.
I don't think you're allowed to do in a script. I understand that in real life it happens, but she does say, I don't really know what I'm trying to say.
Neither do I. Yeah. Where did this come from? This is oversharing.
I did find the sex scene a bit. The sex in bed is all fine, but the shower, I was just like, just dying a bit.
I remember that being much more happens in it. I was quite disappointed watching
it this
time.
Just some very tame biting. But
watching it this time, I was like, oh, well, she's biting him because he's a biter.
It's more of a nibble. I don't know.
But he's a wolf. So I guess, I mean, on purpose, he said to her, bite him, because biting is going to be something.
Part of his thing.
Yeah.
John Landis regrets cutting back on that sex scene.
Really?
Yeah, he says
me
he
too.
Wished, he wished there was more in him.
Do you ever think about Jenny Agutter? Is it you that does?
No,
I thought.
I mean,
I
think everyone does a little bit, but not particularly.
I weirdly don't, because the Railway Children. So when I was younger, I was told to read the Railway Children, and I was a big reader, and I was like, brilliant. You know, someone's given me a recommendation. It felt like a bit more grown up, a bit older than I was. And all I remember from the Railway Children is them saying, we were poor now, we had to choose between jam or butter. And I was like, that is not relatable at all. Like, that's not poor.
And that's why you don't fancy Jenny
And that's
Agutter.
Why I don't fancy Jenny Agutter, because then I watched it and I was like, God, you're annoying.
I don't
what
mean
are you
that's
talking
her,
about?
I don't Sorry. Think that's That's her fault.
She embodies the annoyance I felt with the railway children.
Yeah, but you
I know.
We had a conversation just the other day about you. I use butter and mayonnaise, and you use one or the other.
Oh, that's rank. And you don't use butter, you fucking vegan. Use margarine.
All right,
and mayonnaise.
Margarine. I was just using a shorthand.
Use margarine and what? Egg-free mayonnaise.
What I'm saying
pervert.
Is, there's a spread. Veganaise. Very nice. Anyway, you can have mayonnaise with a spread together. You don't replace the spread, the butter-based spread or an equivalent, with mayonnaise.
If the sandwich is cold, yes, you do.
Well, I'll be honest, I've spent too much of my life listening to you have this discussion. This happens a lot, this particular discussion. So it's Moondance by Van Morrison playing in this scene. And I heard Landis talking about some of the songs he tried to get but didn't. He wanted Bob Dylan's version of Blue Moon. But at the time, Bob Dylan was famously a born-again Christian, didn't want to be involved with an R-rated movie. But he also wanted Moonshadow by Cat Stevens, as he was called then. But he wouldn't let them have it because he thought werewolves were real.
Okay.
And he didn't want to make trouble for himself.
I thought werewolves were real when I was a child. But I really did. I didn't say this, but werewolves were the monster of all monsters that terrified me the most growing up as a kid, of all the mythical creatures. This is the one that if I was out in the woods and it was getting dark, it was werewolves that I was imagining were behind the trees.
Fair enough.
Maybe because there could be wolves behind a tree. Maybe that's what it is, because there's not going to be a vampire or a Frankenstein behind a tree, but there could be a wolf.
In Leeds, in the 1980s.
More chance of that than a vampire.
I mean, yeah, true, but negligible.
It was poltergeist for me, like the thing you can't see and it can like tip your life upside down and hurt you and all that, but it's terrifying.
Not real.
or
jam or butter.
Actually, a point about the music, I would be interested to know what you think. And since this is a podcast, I can actually ask you what you think. So this scene... So they've had sex, fine. Let's talk about Dr. Hirsch in a minute. He's weirdly off to Yorkshire to like figure out what's going on. Just as someone who's lived in London and the North, like, that's a fucking hell of a drive whim. Like,
very committed.
Yeah.
And he's makes me like him, though.
He's doing basically a 600-mile round trip.
But it's good because he does give his reasons for going. He's like, these wounds had been treated before I got to David, so something is afoot here.
Yes.
I mean, again... Medical professionals with a lot of time on their hands.
Yeah, that's true. So David's in the flat by himself because Alex hasn't given him a key because he's a sex slave. So then the tension is he going to turn into a werewolf? And so Bad Moon Rising plays, which is a brilliant, cracking song, but does it undercut the tension a little bit? Because it's just like a fun tune.
I like the music choices because they're so off kilter with the rest of the film.
Yeah.
They're obviously too on the nose, but I feel like they're driving the narrative. They're driving the story. I feel that he's trying to build anticipation by doing it. So yes, it does tell us where it's going, but I don't mind that. I mean, it was interesting. I listened to the commentary. There's a lovely commentary that Griffin Dunne and David Norton do together, and they sound like they really get along, although they do get lost watching the film a bit too often. Mm. You're supposed to talk over it, lads. But they were saying here, it feels like, and how he played it was like a junkie waiting for the drugs to kick in as he's walking around, like there's
feels
something
like
throwing,
that.
Yeah,
flowing
true.
Through his
heart. Can't settle, changing TV channels. There's a line here that I couldn't quite work out. I have questions and theories. But when he talks about Lon Chaney's father being the one who kills him in The Wolfman, and he goes, I've got this theory that it has to be someone who loves you that kills you, which sort of feels like at that point that it's setting up.
It really does, doesn't it?
That she is going to be the one
back to that.
Who has to kill him.
Yeah, I'll come back to that later.
Are you going to come back to that?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
All right, okay, cool.
Yeah. It's frustrating. It's maddening.
Are you saying stop now and you'll do it later?
No, I can repeat you.
It's cool that you pointed it out here. This is when it happened, but yes.
You didn't know. You can't read my mind,
I can't
can
read
you?
Your mind. No, I certainly
source
can't.
Source of many an argument.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, sorry, just to jump ahead, but Dog Soldiers also set something up which really maddeningly doesn't pay off.
All right. I'm probably going to talk about that on Thursday.
Oh, shit. Is that one of your bits?
I mean, it's nice that you mentioned it here, I thought I'd wait till the Dog Soldiers episode.
Can't read your mind. Can't read your mind.
No, source of many arguments.
But then the transformation is upon us. So here it is. One of the most famous scenes in cinema history, maybe?
Yeah, I would say so.
It's fucking awesome. His limbs elongate. His spine pops. His body lengthens. Then the snout pops out. It's amazing. It took a week to film. He was like pinned to the floor. It's just incredible. I've seen it a lot of times before, and the sounds, the crunching and the popping noises, and he's in a lot of pain. It's fantastic. And it delivers on everything that John Landis wanted.
And it's all happening in that harsh light.
Yes.
That's the key, isn't it? And there's no one he's cutting away to. you know, he's cutting around him, but we, you know, it's brutal for Rick Baker.
Yeah.
You know, you can't make a single mistake here. And he nails it. And it's fun hearing how they did stuff behind the scenes, like syringes with plungers. They pushed the plunger and that's how the fingers got longer. It was just a syringe and a bit of rubber pushing it out.
Oh.
And not, just really simple, practical stuff. Yeah. But as he said, he had 10 years to prepare for this.
Yeah.
Well, he talks about building all the equipment for it. And he was like, it was months and months and months. And I get there on set and we do it. And the sequence lasts about 10 seconds. And John Landis goes, cut, we got that. And it's like this sort of weird thing where he's like, that was like months.
I didn't know what his point was. Has he not been on a film set before? That really confused me. Or the hair growing. He simply pulled the hair backwards through the thing and then played it forwards, played it the way around. It's like, it's all so simple when you know how they're doing it, but it's just brilliantly put together.
Yeah.
The weird thing is that Rick Baker wanted the or thought that the werewolf should be a biped because, like, you know, that's the human part of the werewolf is the fact that it walks on two legs.
Had he seen Dog Soldiers and he thought, that looks shit.
I don't know. I don't know if this looks any better once this wolf's wandering around.
Oh, really? I love it.
I think it looks really good.
I love the fact it's on all fours. I love the fact that John Landis said to him, I don't want a biped werewolf. I want a fucking demon hound from hell.
Yeah.
This werewolf is the scariest wolf in cinema.
Because that's the thing that when he's off on his rampage, when he goes to the river and there's the community of homeless people, I didn't find that I know you don't, he cut out the bit where they get eaten, but I didn't find that scary because we're in a wide open space. And so your human brain is like, okay, if that was me, you could jump into the river or whatever. But the bit on the underground, even though the businessman is a bit of a dick and all the rest of it, and it's weirdly empty for the Northern Line or whatever, it's so scary seeing an animal on all fours at the bottom of the escalator because it's so alien.
That's it.
Yeah.
That shot.
That's the best
is
bit.
Unbelievable. It's weird. I got fixated. I think it was the same Rick Baker documentary that you watched where they showed loads of unused footage. I don't know whether it would have lessened the effect of that one shot where you're looking down the escalator and the wolf appears at the bottom, which is probably my favourite shot in the movie. Not seen, so I'm not spoiling the bits. Favourite shot in the movie. But there were other scenes where, you know, you're looking down the tunnel on the tube and you feel that the wolf is going to round the corner and it doesn't.
Yeah.
There were actual shots of the wolf rounding the corner. And to my mind, I think it would have been fucking awesome to see it round that corner. And I have no idea why he didn't put that in.
Again, because your human brain is like, okay, something on two legs kind of can be on the underground, that's fine. But a big dog on four, you know, if you see a huge dog on the underground, I mean, I find that a bit scary. So,
well, he did say that he doesn't think the wolf always looked great. And he worries that Landis, looking back on it now, feels like he might have shown too much of the wolf in the final half hour.
I don't think so.
No, I don't.
I always get excited when I remember who the businessman is.
Who is it?
He's Bib Fortuna.
From?
Return of the Jedi. He's Jabba's mate.
Really?
Yeah, that's the same actor.
Sorry, Bib Fortuna is the guy with the thing around his neck, his translator.
That's him,
guy.
Same guy. And you can see it when you're... Sorry, geeking out. way too geeky. I just thought I knew acted like it.
That's great.
Michael Carter, yeah.
David's had a pretty good time. So he's back home. He's a bit frisky, but he's essentially fine. He's woken up in the zoo.
He's gotten over his best friend's death really quickly.
Yeah.
His best friend's... I know he's getting some good sex.
Yes.
But he's really quickly recovered from that.
Yeah, because he's very sad at first. But he is, he's basically over it. I mean, there's stuff... I haven't got any notes on it because the zoo stuff is all funny. You know, in real life, there's real extras walking... not real extras. He thought they were extras, but they're real people because the shoot overran. The stuff with the kid with the balloons... The kid with the balloons...
Rufus Deakin is the actor.
Rufus Deakin.
God bless him.
Didn't annoy me as much as it annoyed you. I think he delivers his line really well.
So strange that bothered you.
Yeah.
A naked American man stole my balloon.
Perfect.
Say it normally.
Don't need to do it again.
You have skipped over a scene I thought you'd love, which is where the young yuppie couple get killed in the gardens.
Yeah.
And there's the people whose house they go around to dinner for.
Yeah.
And she sends her husband out.
Yeah.
And he's like, sure, I'll go check on what that scary noise was. I'm fucking taking my drink with me.
Oh,
I think it's a Jack and Coke as well. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll go check if that's a wolf.
Oh my God,
but
you.
I'm taking this.
You're so right. I find myself like, oh, we've run out. I'll go to the shop. I probably am going to take my drink with me though. It's only around the corner, but it's like a party. So it's fine.
Landis said that line was inspired by him watching the news and Thatcher blamed the Brixton riots on hooligans rather than acknowledging the racial issues. So that's why they say hooligans in the park again.
Yeah.
It was him having a little dig.
Yeah, he's quite good. He's pretty up on his Brit culture.
For
his
sure,
Landis
yeah.
for the. I mean, we've got darts on the TV, the News of the World Nina Carter adverts.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I ended up looking.
Yeah, me too.
Looking I don't know who that is.
Googling all that.
She's very good.
You want to know if it's real. And
exactly.
It was real.
Who was she?
She was a Page Three girl who formed a band called Blonde on Blonde with Jilly Cooper. Jilly Johnson, I think. I can't remember. Anyway, another Page Three girl.
Yeah.
And I kid you not, the actual Wikipedia page reads, without a hint of irony, they were big in Japan.
Amazing. So then when David realises he's been eating people,
Because Alan Ford from Snatch.
Yes!
Yes,
but he's uncredited. It took me ages to find that out.
Such a good actor.
It's on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
But yeah, Brick Tom. It's amazing.
Such a good actor.
So he wants to get himself arrested. Mm. And this is a very funny scene. It's a bit long, but like he's in Trafalgar Square and he's shouting whatever he can to a bobby to get himself arrested, such as Queen Elizabeth is a man. That made me laugh, but Shakespeare was French for some reason. That's I was tittering.
That's a good line. That's a good line.
The thing is though, I am amazed that he doesn't get arrested because all you need to do to get arrested, you need to swear at a police officer or hit them and then you definitely get arrested. Mm.
Yeah, he doesn't do either of those things. Or does he? I think maybe he does swear in the end. But yeah, I mean, if you're a bobby on the beat and you're like, fuck the paperwork, just piss off, mate.
Yes, that's true.
It's also quite funny that they get out of a cab at one point and the driver goes, that's £1.50.
I'm like,
oh my God, 1981.
I couldn't believe it.
You cannot actually travel in a cab for £1.50. The minute you close the door, it's £2.50 already.
That's correct. Mm.
So says someone who gets a lot of tax. We'll be on the tube home, won't we?
Yeah, and we don't know how much that is.
What is that like?
I was waiting for you outside and a bus went past and I thought, I wonder if you're going to get... And I was like, of course you're not getting off the bus. And I thought, what might be fun to do is me and Chris make you go on a bus one day.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We'll film it and put it on the Instagram.
Yeah. Just on Margaret Thatcher a second. I read this thing in The Guardian. It's uncorroborated, but apparently she's meant to have said, so she maybe didn't. If you're ever on a bus over the age of 26, you should consider yourself a failure. It sounds like her, doesn't it? But
anyway. I was born in the year she came to power, so probably, you know, it's probably some sort of correlation there.
So we're off to...
Someone once said, you're Thatcher's child. I was like,
not
what?
Literally, but yeah, I am.
Yeah, maybe.
So we're off to watch a porno now called See You Next Wednesday.
And that's the only thing that changed from the 1969 script. He said it didn't really change anything, but... There were cartoon cinemas everywhere in the 1960s. So he goes to a Roadrunner cartoon in 69 and now in 1980 and he's going to hardcore pornography.
It's amazing though, because I was like, was that cinema really there in Piccadilly Circus? And it was called the Eros Cinema. Yeah. And like you say, it was when he first visited cartoons and then it became an erotic theatre.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I bet I find it weird that like there was a cinema, right? I really wish
there's
I'd be...
There's probably more than one.
Mm.
Well, you remember Soho 20 years ago.
I do. A few. Well, not even 20 years ago. Soho's changed. Remember the sort of sex alley? It's on its way out now.
It's all flats now, probably.
There's a couple of specialist outlets still on there.
I mean, I've never understood it, but I don't suppose there's spaces for me. Because I don't know. And maybe you don't know. Are you allowed to wank in a porn cinema or not? Or is that the point of it?
I don't think... Pee Wee Herman was allowed.
Paul Rubens got in trouble. He's the person to ask.
But that was
in
America.
Let's get him on.
Okay, great.
That was in America, wasn't it? Okay. I don't know about the UK.
I mean, otherwise, it's just
I'll
a
be
very
honest,
tense
Vicky,
place.
I'll be honest, Vicky, it's never come up.
Mm. Yeah. You must have.
You just must have done.
Because otherwise, I mean,
what's the point?
Although they did used to have stories back then.
Okay.
So, I mean, maybe you went for the plot.
Well, See You Next Wednesday doesn't, but it's fine.
It does have a story.
It's got a great story.
Someone's got the wrong room.
Yeah. Lindsay Drew playing Brenda Bristles.
Yeah.
This was the first thing they shot. And Landis said that the British crew were thinking, who the hell is this bloke and what have we got ourselves into? Because the first day of American Werewolf, you're shooting hardcore porn.
Because that's his running joke, isn't it? See You Next Wednesday.
Yes, in all his films.
So David meets everyone he's killed. They're pretty pissed off about it. This is the start of him, character-wise, he's realising this can't go on. Mm. And he transforms and he runs riot through Piccadilly Circus. So a lot has been said about this because, you look at that now, and you're just like, how is that possible that you could bring Piccadilly Circus to a standstill?
Mm. And why is this film turned into the Blues Brothers?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you for why.
An R-rated Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
No one crashes a car like John Landis in the 80s.
It's really, it's brilliantly done. Like, I absolutely love this scene.
Well, it's our friend Vic Armstrong driving the bus.
Oh, yeah. So apparently You back in the day,
our friend.
we've met him.
We both met him.
Yeah,
he's lovely.
Oh yeah. Did you tell me that?
Yeah.
Read bits from his book. Interviewed him on stage in Trafalgar Square once.
Okay.
Lovely
nice.
Man. Great guy.
Good.
We did him on Indiana Jones.
We covered Vic Armstrong.
Why are you still talking about him, Vicky?
Sorry.
Stop talking about Vic Armstrong. Yeah.
Do you know what I get obsessed with when you tell me about Indiana Jones? That Harrison Ford's kids thought that Vic Armstrong was him.
Yeah, Vic claims that. Yeah, it's a good story.
I think about that all the time.
Yeah, from behind. I think a lot of people from behind thought he was him.
Including his children.
And the best story is the postcard that Harrison Ford gave him at the end of Last Crusade, where he was like, "It's a good job you can't talk, otherwise I'd be in trouble."
If he can talk, but. Anyway, no,
that's the weird thing that Vic Armstrong can't actually talk.
Victoria, you haven't met him, so why?
How the fuck would you know?
My Q&A was very awkward. It was just Q. Yeah.
You just thought he was being rude. Yeah.
And Paul Rubens was in the front row.
John Landis got got loads of like bobbies and put on a screening apparently of the Blues Brothers for them and said, "So listen, do you mind if I shut down Piccadilly Circus?" They were like, "Fuck it, go for it. We love this film." People, you know, a bus crashes, someone gets their head ripped off.
It's so good.
It's brilliant. Mm. Other people, and it's the carnage that the wolf causes, but it doesn't hold back at all. So people get smashed, run over, thrown through glass. It's brilliant. Incredible. And then Alex arrives. And there's this huge police cordon, but they're like, "On you go, love. No problem there." Like,
she pushes through.
I don't think you're allowed to do that. I think the point of it is no one goes past this line.
I mean, she's nimble. And
she walks very slowly down the alley. She's like, "I've got this." I don't know. I think maybe I missed it, but Dr. Hirsch just needs to say she can deal with this, police officers, and they'll go, "Okay, love, it's up to you," kind of thing. But
yeah, but she can't.
No, she can't. So... what does she say? She's like, "I love you." And then he has a think about it and he's like, "No, I'm still going to eat you." So.
I don't think he even has a think about it. I think it's the fact that it's just waiting for its moment. There's no thought process where
gone now. There's no David in there.
Exactly.
Oh, I didn't read it like that.
Yeah, I read it she's just an idiot for thinking werewolf.
Do you think he wanted to eat the girl he loves?
I think he's in there. He's a wolf, but he's in there.
No.
And her saying that connects with that human part of him for a second, and then the wolf bit takes over.
You would have, in my mind, you would have the head tilt on its side like a dog assessing something if that was the case. I think she's made the mistake of thinking there's any part of David in that animal.
Yeah. But anyway, he then gets shot to pieces by the police, and that's the end of the film.
And then those credits come in.
It's a very quick cut, isn't it?
It's like the Event Horizon credits. I love shit like that.
I do too. That's it. The film has ended.
Yeah. Is that it, though? Did you read the stuff that comes up on screen during the credits?
There's stuff about Charles and Diana.
There's two. There's one is a joke. He says all characters and events in this film are fictitious. Any similarity to actual events or persons living, dead or undead is purely coincidental. Good gag. But yeah. Lycanthrope Films Limited wishes to extend its heartfelt congratulations to Lady Diana and His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales on the occasion of their marriage, July 29th, 1981. Odd. Really, really odd.
I suppose. I mean, I read all this stuff that was like they felt guilty for like ripping the piss out of the Queen and stuff like that. So he wanted to.
Is this going to redress the balance? I just think it's.
No, I mean.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
Cursed. John Landis cursed that marriage.
Do you think so? Yeah. I mean, maybe we forget what a big deal it was in 1981 for the marriage of HRH Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer. I don't know. I wasn't born, so...
The only other thing I've got is obviously Michael Jackson bloody loved this movie.
Oh yeah,
and went. I'm making a video for.
I'm making a video for
Thriller. Could you come and do it, John? And could Rick Baker do effects? And could it be an amazing video?
Please.
And they went. They said yes, Michael. And so it was great.
Yep. So that's all true.
And John Landis did write a script for the sequel, which followed. Alex Price. The doctor, the nurse.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, he wrote it and he sent it to the studio and he says they fucking hated it.
Wow.
So he went, just
fuck you then.
He actually said, "Do what you want then, but send me the money."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except
it made no money.
I
don't think it was anything to do with that.
Very forgettable. Yeah. Very forgettable.
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah, like really forgettable.
This one, though, Landis said, like a lot of my movies, it was crapped on. And he is one of those directors that the critics hated at the time, hated his films, rather. But yet they made a lot of money and they become classics over time. And as we talked about the other day, Planet of the Apes, there being no makeup Oscar, Rick Baker won the first ever Academy Award for makeup for this film. Deservedly so.
Of course.
And The Howling didn't.
Yeah. Right, let's do the bits then, shall we? So, Chris, what's your best scene?
Oh, I've got two. Do Alex first and I'll do the one that he
Alex,
doesn't say.
Alex, what's your best scene?
Well, I mean, someone has to do the transformation scene because Excellent. It's absolutely amazing. Mm. But just because I'm going to do two anyway, like I said, in the middle of the episode, so I am actually cheating because I said I wasn't going to do it as the bits. It's the bit where the fucking werewolf appears at the bottom of the escalator.
Awesome.
It is just incredible.
Yep. Do you want to go?
No, you go.
So I'm going to pick Piccadilly Circus. Because I think, John Landis had trouble getting away because it's too funny for this and it's too scary for whatever. This is the perfect blend of horror and comedy because it's genuinely funny. It is when people are getting smashed to bits, but it's very scary watching that wolf run around. So horror comedy is a fucking nightmare to do. And this scene is perfect.
And that face of the wolf, Rick Baker said, because he knew it was only going to be on screen for like a couple of frames. He made that face as scary as possible. And it's a terrifying wolf face.
You feel bad for laughing, which is the point of horror comedy. Like you feel appalled at the deaths and as you're laughing, head off.
Yeah. I see this more as a horror movie, to be perfectly honest, than a horror comedy. For me, it's scarier than it is funny.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, but the humour's everywhere in it. You might not be laughing, but even like that scene in the cinema when all the dead people are talking to him, they've all got cracking one-liners.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant how he's put it all together like that. I'm going for the scene in The Slaughtered Lamb. Because I think it sets the tone brilliantly. I love the acting. And it's got so many quotable lines as well. You made me miss. stay on the road. Keep clear of the moors. Beware the moon. Like, it's just a brilliant 10 minutes of cinema. And it might be my favourite scene in the whole movie. I know that's why I picked it this way. But it's the one I look forward to the most, I think.
Okay. What's your most valuable whatever, Alex?
Mr. Baker. I mean, it has to be. I mean, it's just, you know, it was quite interesting because you watch this and you go, wow, the practical effects are what make it. But he says that he'd like to do at some point, he says he's never been provided with the opportunity to do another werewolf transformation, and he would actually like to do one which melds practical effects with CGI. But I mean, based on this, why would you? Because this is the best transformation ever.
Yeah. You, Chris?
Me? I would say it is Rick Baker. Because he did make the best scene in the film. because not only is it a brilliant scene, contradicting myself, but it also, I mean, it literally revolutionised the film industry.
Yeah.
So has to be that.
All right, 3 for 3, Rick Baker, just obviously, it's phenomenal. Chris, what would you change?
So, I've already said this. You've got one of the funniest people in history in The Slaughtered Lamb. Give him a line. I don't think the romance aspect of this film works. I don't know if it's the writing or the acting, but I think you really need to believe their love, and I don't. So that needs to be developed. And then, you know, she should be the one that kills him at the end. Like, it just has to, that romance has to be more believable, and then she has to kill him. It's just a no-brainer.
That's my change as well.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I thought when we were going to talk about it, but there you go. We're doing
that's
it right at the very end.
Because it's set up. It's all there.
But so my thing was, Is it having fun with us, though? Is it basically going, oh, there is all this sort of mystique about werewolves and it has to be someone who loves you,
yeah,
kills
maybe.
It. And then is it the fact that at the end, that's why, when she's like, but David, I love you. And you're like, oh, and then she's going to have to kill him because of that love. And you realise, fuck, there's no romance about this. There's no romantic quality to being a werewolf. It's all bullshit. And it's just an animal that is going to fucking kill
us. I think you might be right there because is it working against the cliche? Is that the ending of every werewolf movie up until now?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it is a red herring. It's put in there to on purpose.
That's okay. Really interesting. Yeah, I think that what would button that for me is because the camera, it's her face that takes us out. So unless you get across from the actor that she's just realised that, which now that you've said it, I can see. But if the camera just moved past her, it's not her story, it's not her emotion, it's not their relationship, it's arbitrary kind of thing, like he's just a dog kind of thing, and the camera just moves up and away, then that would have sort of hammered that home to me. But yeah, I can see what you're saying. So yeah, that is my change also. And what about you?
Oh, well, now we've discussed it, it's not a change anymore. So give fucking Rick Mayall a line. It's Rick Mayall.
That's it.
All right, then. That is An American Werewolf in London. Done, done, done. I'm very excited about this. You weren't in the room when I heard about this news. We have an audio quiz today, Chris.
Okay.
Which means shit could go wrong here. So let's hope not. Okay. I'm going to play you an animal noise. You need to tell me what animal it is.
Okay.
We're dealing with howls and roars and things like that here because obviously
And do it right, just because I know the way Vicky's mind works. She's going to shout every single animal she knows. So do we get one guess each? And it's whoever's right gets the point, and then we go back and forth, or is it just going to be a fucking free for all?
Because he's never shouted everything that's in his head. That's my thing, is it?
That's all I do.
How many shouts do you want per...
I want to shout as many times as I like.
Okay. All right. Let's Vicky can it. Shout as many times as she likes. You get one.
Yay!
Let's get the volume. Okay, here we go.
Oh, sorry, just one thing. Are they all real animals? There's not like a unicorn or a T-Rex or
no,
whatever.
He's found the sound of a unicorn. Yeah, he recorded it. It was a pig farm.
They're all real. They're all real animals.
Thank you.
Tiger, lion, rhino.
That is terrifying. Jesus, a hippo.
Bear, grizzly bear.
It's a bear.
Yes.
Oh, that's really scary.
1 point to Alex. Okay.
I know my bears.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Oh, no, it's going to play an advert. Don't play an advert. Talk about yourselves.
So, what's your favourite bear? Polar.
A polar? Probably, actually.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
They're great.
And scary.
I like a Kodiak bear.
Oh, they're the cute ones.
They're the ones who take pictures.
Idiot. Oh, a wolf.
You both get a point there. Okay, here we go. Here we go.
Tiger, lion.
Gorilla.
Gorilla.
Oh, fuck.
Wait for it.
Jesus.
It's really frightening. Imagine that. Okay. Yeah,
that's definitely a silverback.
A man. It's definitely a man.
I've always wanted to say that. Definitely a silverback.
You've got a silverback.
Okay, here we go.
Cow.
Bison.
Hippo.
It's a hippo.
Jesus.
Most dangerous animal in Africa.
I'm
more people
of...
killed by hippos every year than lions.
I know.
Is this another animal?
No, that was it. That was it. Okay, and we are...
I mean, obviously that was a hippo star. I knew that.
Cow.
Tiger. Lion. Cheetah, panther, leopard,
rhino,
walrus.
You should never smile at this animal.
Crocodile.
Correct.
Didn't know they made that noise.
No, you can smile at a crocodile. That's all I do. Love them.
Yeah. Okay, this is the last one and it's 3-all.
Oh, man.
I hate this.
This
I
is
do.
Good. This,
I do. Why do we do this?
Because you love it when you win, Vicky.
Yep.
You lose your shit.
Chimpanzee.
Seagull. Bat, cat, rat.
A howling monkey.
A monkey. A baboon.
A capuchin monkey.
I guarantee you've heard this sound in real life.
A cat.
A bat.
A fox.
Correct.
Yes!
It's rutting foxes.
That's my house. That's what it sounds like.
That's my house.
It's such a beautiful sound.
Noisy fuckers.
It's such a beautiful sound.
So hot. Great stuff. I lost. Brilliant. Well done, Victoria. You don't seem as happy as normal.
I'm trying to rein it in because I think I disgraced myself last week when I yelled at you.
A little bit.
Yeah, no one came out of that well.
Congratulations, Victoria.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. That is us done. A quick reminder. Tickets are on sale for our first ever live show, which is happening on September the 4th at 9:30 p.m. as part of the London Podcast Festival. You can find out all the details on our Twitter, where we are at Clash Pod, and you can get tickets now on the London Podcast Festival website. We'll have more information about what films we're doing very, very soon. But yeah, get tickets anyway. You don't need to know what films we're doing. It's going to be fucking great, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
It is. Thanks, guys. Right then, we will be back on Thursday talking about Dog Soldiers, but let's look ahead to next week, which it's Victoria's choices. What's the clue?
It's Friends Till the End.
Friends Till the End. Oh, I like that. That's nice. That's really nice. All right, then. That's your clue for next week. Friends Till the End. Like I said, back on Thursday talking Dog Soldiers and declaring the winner of our Werewolf Clash. In the meantime, please do subscribe to us if you haven't done already. Leave us a rating and review and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod. Bye-bye. See you Thursday.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.